session number 10602, reel 32.
Mr. Elliot, reel 32. You were just describing your advance through the village of Saint-Pierre and you got as far as the orchards. Could you take up the story from there, please?
Well, by the time we'd got to the orchard, we'd had one casualty. One private soldier had been wounded, badly wounded, and was taken out. The stretcher bearers with us, behind us, took him away. Then we got to the edge of the orchard, when there was machine gun fire opened up on us from the enemy, and there was two men went down. One was from my platoon and the other was a lance corporal from the next platoon. Both were severely wounded. As a matter of fact, they were both dying, but we couldn't stop to look after them. We just shouted for stretcher bearers and we went forward again for about another 300 or 400 yards.
How were you advancing there? Were you still on foot or were you crawling?
Oh no, on foot, in the open. We were going forward just as we'd started. When there was any shelling or barrage coming down on us, we just went to the ground. And when it eased off, we just stood up and went forward again.
Was there much enemy shelling at this point?
I was surprised that there wasn't a great deal, but as I've explained, it was falling on the right and not on the left. The rest of the battalion, I think, got a hammer on, but we were considerably less hit than the others.
So it was mainly machine gun fire, though, rifle fire?
Well, we just got this machine gun fire when we got to the edge, where we were entering the bocage, where you had the deep tracks and high hedgerows. Well, we'd just gone through the village, through the orchard, when we came to the bocage, if you like. The odd field here and there, but there was a lot of woods, you know, thickish woods and that. And we went forward to the edge of a field where there was a wood in a field. We went right down. That would be about another 300 or 400 yards we went. And we were told to stop. That was the end of the advance. And our casualties up till then had only been two, one killed and one wounded.
And that's from your platoon?
My platoon. But there'd been another lad killed. I knew from the other platoon the other lad had been killed. But I'm only talking about my platoon now, not the rest of the battalion.
Do you remember the names of the men who were
Yes.
Killed?
The man who was killed was Private Prest from Scarborough. And strange to say, it was his mate who was killed in the other platoon from Scarborough, Lance Corporal Ward. I forget the name of the lad, the first lad that was wounded at the moment.
But when you got to this stopping point, did you dig in then? Or?
No, we were going to dig in, and then we were told to come back to the orchard. Now, we got back to the orchard, and we dug in straight away.
Why did you move back to the orchard? Was that because you had gone
too far? I think we were too far forward. There was no reserves to cover up our rear. And I mean, the country was at a place that was open, and on top of that there was a lot of bocage, and also there was a lot of snipers around, because in the wood just in front of the orchard there was two snipers had been killed. I don't know whether they'd been killed by us or who they'd been killed by, but they were hanging from trees. I saw two. They were hanging high up in the trees, and there had been ropes or whatever it was that was securing them to the trees, and they'd been firing from there, but the two had been killed. We never stopped to get them down. They're still there when I left that area. But I didn't leave the area, actually. Later, that night at meal time, I would say about 5, 6 or 7 o'clock. It's difficult to give times. There was two prisoners walked in, and our lads, having lost one man dead and seen the lance corporal, the other platoon being killed, they got very ugly, if you like. They wanted to see the boots off, and the platoon commander, the company commander, the sergeant major and myself and my platoon commander, we pointed our weapons at our own men to stop them from killing the two prisoners. And the lads couldn't understand why, you see. And we explained to them we might get information from them which would save their lives. Intelligence we were after. And, you know, these youngsters, they were so worked up at being in action. And they realised that we were doing the correct thing.
Yes, can I ask you about the effect of this first action on your platoon?
I think they thought they were lucky to have gone as far with so few casualties. But it didn't stop there. That night, I was ordered by my platoon commander to look for the dead, which the casualties, see if there was any casualties. We knew that being casualties, but to go and look forward for the casualties. Any dead was to bury the dead there and then, and if there was any wounded, to bring them in. Well, I went to the forward part of the barrage where I knew we'd left Private Prest and Lance Corporal Ward. But when we got there, both Prest and Ward, their bodies had vanished. But there was also the bodies of some other DLI lying there, had been killed the same day. I think there was three. But they weren't from my platoon, and I didn't recognise them, but I recognised the badges and the shoulder flashes. So I had two or three lads with me, because I was going to dig the graves at the point where I'd been ordered and carry out the burial service, the field service. And the Germans opened up. There was a barrage came up. So I told the two lads, well, two or three lads, whatever it was, to get back in undercover. And I went to look to the dead. I searched the pockets, took every thing of identification, the identification disc from the neck, and I placed them in a pouch of some sort, a plastic pouch, which we had. And I saw there were some weapon slits quite by, so I just took the bodies, wrapped them in a ground sheet and buried them where they were, and I filled them in because we were still under a barrage, and I let the other lads who should have been doing the filling in, I let them stop undercover while I covered these lads up. When it was done, I went back to the platoon commander, and he said that we would be going into action again the next morning. So we'd had our morning meal the next day, and we went over the same ground which we'd already taken. Only I was ordered not to go further than a certain area of the ground we'd already taken, while the platoon commander and the two sections went forward. They went forward, and luckily we had no casualties. And they went into the bocage, or quite as close to the bocage as you could get. And they withdrew, and we came back to the same weapons that we'd just left. And I thought, well, to me, this is crackers. We were going out. I wasn't told it was a battle patrol or a fighting patrol or anything. I was just told we were going to advance. And when we'd advanced and taken the ground, we were told to withdraw again, so we withdrew.
Had you any idea why that was?
I think the explanation comes up because that night we heard armoured fighting vehicles coming towards us. So we withdrew from the weapon slits in the orchard and went to near the little church in Saint-Pierre. And we stopped there overnight, and then we went forward the next morning. We went straight into the weapon slits we'd left. And then the next platoon to us had asked if they could have a Bren support section from my platoon, and we sent, I was going to send a lance corporal and two men, where my lance sergeant, Harry Markey, he said, I'll take them. I said, well, where's your lance corporal? He said, well, he was slightly wounded and he's gone back to get treatment. And Harry said, I'll take them in. He said, you needn't worry.
This is the carrier platoon?
No, this is Harry, my lance sergeant. He said, I would take the Bren group in from my platoon to support the next platoon, because they were going forward over almost the same ground, only to the right of us, where we'd been the previous day. And they went in, and there was, they hadn't any casualties except my Bren group. They were all killed. The lance sergeant and the two privates, Private Palmer and Private Smiles, they were killed. But the platoon they were supporting, they had no casualties at all, no wounded, nothing.
At this point, would you say that the Germans had the advantage in terms of the lie of the land and their
Yes. positions? Yes, no argument about that. The Germans had been there for years, so they had the ground covered and they had it ranged, if you like. But what they hadn't got was superiority in gunfire. We had the Royal Navy and we had battleships or big cruisers who could fire big shells. And we had lots of the Royal Artillery, field regiments. Then we had self-propelled guns could come up, and we also had the Air Force. So, except in close combat, we were at long odds of being hit.
In the situation you really were getting towards close combat.
We were getting to close combat, and it was the enemy, they had any amount of Spandau machine guns, and they were better than, well, they were more rapid fire than we had.
Did you feel that the bombardment which preceded your attack was effective?
I would have thought so, otherwise I don't think we would have got as far as we did.
What about for the two platoons on your right then? Were they apparently...
Well, this was just it, you see. You cannot really stop a gun, you know. If the Germans had guns dug in and they had tanks dug in, you know, the tank would come up, fire around, and just dash back. They were dug in just like troops, more or less, and they would come up a slight incline, just show the snouts over the top. They would fire and back in again. They maybe fire a few rounds, and then they would back down again. Well, you know, you've got to get a direct hit on them from artillery or naval ships. And I mean, an aircraft would have to be right. You know, drop a bomb right into them to hit them. Because, you know, it's surprising how you live in a heavy bombardment. If you're below the level of the ground, you have a good 90 to 100% of not being hit. I had one weapon slit hit in a direct hit. But, I mean, I was the only one. While I was there, I mean, a soldier was badly wounded and the other one had his rifle smashed to ribbons while he was holding it, and he was in shock, which one would expect. And I had a lance corporal carry the badly wounded man while it was raining metal, and he led the other lad to platoon HQ, and then he went on when I said to him, hand the wounded over to me and I'll take him to the RAP, regimental aid post. He said, oh, Sarge, I'm on my feet, I'll do it. And he carried the badly wounded lad to the RAP while it was raining metal. And I looked after the other lad. As a matter of fact, I'd just made tea, so I gave him some tea. I said, sit down there, lad, and have some tea. But he was shaking. I could understand it because I'd done the same when I'd been in a bombardment. You know, when you've been in a bombardment, your body loses control and you're just shaking. There's nothing you can do about it until it stops.
Did that have to, that must have been at Dunkirk, you said?
That was to Dunkirk, yes. Why?
Now you were in France again, did you find that you were perhaps a little more hardened to these things than than you had been before?
I wasn't hardened, but I expected. I was expecting the same thing to happen to me as what had happened before, four years previous. Yes, yes. In the bombardments, when the ground was vibrating, yes, I was moving just the same. Oh, aye, it happens.
Did you mentioned shell shock in that man who'd had a very close escape?
Yes.
Were there other cases of shell shock after bombardments and so on that you can recall?
Well, I cannot recall any more because I was only in action, I was only there for another day before I was wounded and I was out. But up till then, I had had four men killed, three wounded, two wounded taken out. I had a lance corporal and a corporal slightly wounded. They had gone out for treatment and come back in. This was out of a total of 33. The platoon commander and myself made 33 of that platoon when it landed. And when you work out, there was four killed, there was three wounded, two brought out. That was six, six out of 33. So that was a sixth of the platoon strength gone, and that was in no time. And I think we got off light.
Were there any cases this early on of military discipline having to be used for people who refused to obey orders?
No. When I mentioned that, it wasn't refusing to obey orders, it was just at the heat of the moment. I think it would happen any time to anybody. You know, if you've been with a mate and you've just seen him killed and you saw the enemy, your first instinct is to have your own back, if you like. Revenge. Revenge may not be the word, but that's what would happen. Reaction.
You talk about the incident of the two prisoners.
Yes.
There. Yes. Yes.
It's reaction. Now, on one day, there was a battalion of the Duke of Wellington's was on our left. Now, we could see them because, as I explained to you, there was like small valleys. Well, this battalion of the Duke of Wellington's, we were told there was a unit going in on our left, and they were directly on our left. We could see them. And they went into action, and like us, they'd progressed with very few or very light casualties. But the strangest thing that happened was, instead of digging in straight away after they'd taken the ground like we did, they just took all the gear off, opened the packs, and were going to go back for the breakfasts. You know, they hadn't had the meal before they'd gone in. So this was the information that was given to us afterwards. And we were appalled. I mean, the NCOs, the officers of our company, they said, good God, what are they doing? Why aren't they digging in? And surely the Germans counterattacked. We didn't see the Germans coming, but we saw them, the men of the Duke of Wellington's fallen, and we could hear the machine guns, the artillery, the mortars, whatever it was that went amongst them. Well, we were later told that CO was given his bowler hat straight away, sent back to England in disgrace. But for truth, I couldn't tell you, but that's what we were told, and we saw what had happened. I mean, they couldn't hide what had happened because we saw what had happened. They couldn't cover it up.
Okay, thank you. Perhaps you could just take me on through the action. You said you had one more day before you were actually wounded.
Well, myself, I went. I left my platoon.
I think where you got to actually was the last thing you said was to do with the burial party that night.
Oh, I'd done that, and this was the next day. You know.
That's okay, we'll take you up from there.
Well, the next day, it was in late afternoon, late or early evening, and I went back. The men were all dug in. It was quiet, and I went back into the next orchard. We were in one orchard, and I went back to go into the next orchard, and I felt no more. I felt my arm go numb. My bottom half part of my left hand went numb. And when I looked, I'd received a bullet through the front of the arm out, and there was a bleeding and numbness. So I went back to the corporal, the senior corporal, and I said, I've been hit, by a sniper from somewhere. I said, someone's hit me. And I showed him my hand, and I got my field dressing out of my pocket, and I got him to tie it on, and I went back to the regimental aid post. I was sent back to a field hospital where there was operation, and I was back in England the next day. And that was my end of Normandy.
What can you tell me what happened at the RAP?
They just looked at it and said, oh, put him on a jeep and send an ambulance jeep and send him to the hospital.
Was there anything given to you there?
No.
Any painkillers or anything like that?
I was given an injection of...
Morphine, is it?
No. The TT. Anti-tetanus. Anti-tetanus. And that was all he did. He said, well, you've already got bandage on. He said, you'll have to go to the hospital, so we'll not bother taking it off.
And from the RAP, where did you go then?
To a field hospital. And I arrived there, and when I arrived there, they took me in, took particulars, service, rank, number, name, and etc. And then I knew no more. They said, well, you're going into theatre. And I went into theatre, and I knew no more till next morning, or through the night. And I was trying to get out of bed. And one of the orderlies came along. He said, what the hell are you doing? I said, oh, I'm going back up to the lads. He says, you're not going back up to no lads. He says, you're stopping in bed. And next morning...
How did you feel about being wounded as a slight wound in some respects? It's serious enough to put you out. But was that reaction, you think, your desire to get back?
Oh, aye, normal reaction, to look after the lads. You know, you trained them, and you thought you could go back. I think you think yourself a little god, you cannot be hurt, but you can. And as I say, I was hurt.
At the time, were you disappointed that you couldn't be with the lads back in the line?
Yes. Because at the time, I thought my platoon commander... Well, he had changed. Let's put it this way. He had changed because he apologised to me just before I was wounded. Lieutenant John Mackey. He was a really good... He was a book soldier, if you like. He was a good soldier, but he was a book soldier. And...
He changed. How did he change?
Well, in training in England, whenever I trained the men to do something, he would change it completely to the book. Or as the orders he'd received from the company commander, where I trained it on practical experience. Now, I was the only NCO, senior NCO, in the company who'd been at Dunkirk. None of the officers had ever been... hadn't seen a hungry cat. And I was the only one who had. And I was training the platoon according to what I'd gone through and not what the book said.
Did you resent Mackey's...
Oh, no. He was boss.
You said he changed. How did he change when he'd been in London?
Well, the day before I was wounded, two things happened. First, the company commander, who had threatened more than once to bust me for not obeying his direct instructions under training at times when I was doing platoon commander. And he was visiting with the brigadier, and when he saw me in my platoon area, he said, Sergeant, I apologise for all the words I said to you back in England. He said, you are quite correct in what you told me in England. He said, you are quite correct. And the brigadier turned around and said, it's the first time I've ever known an officer apologise to an NCO in the field. And about an hour or 2 hours after that, my platoon commander, John Mackey, he said, Sergeant, if I could start all over again, he said, I would change. He said, what you tried to tell me back home has actually happened here in Normandy. He says, on the battlefield, what you said would happen has happened.
Can you give an example of the sort of things that when you were training, that you were doing that they objected to?
Well, most of them was, you see, when you were training with live ammunition, the live ammunition was continually going away from you. It was your own people firing to give you cover, training for creeping barrages. And I was constantly telling my men, that wouldn't be the case. I said, you'd be getting it coming at you, and you would find places to dig in, and you wouldn't just dig in where you were at. Well, constantly on training, the officers were making the men dig in, even if it was only scratch, about 2 or 3 inches out of the ground, and they would move them on another half hour or an hour and scratch the ground again. And I was telling them it was all wrong. It wouldn't happen.
What were you saying, that they would find a suitable place to
dig in? A suitable place to dig in case there was a counter-attack. And that was my basic instinct from previous experience and also from professional training.
Whereas they were saying that you would move so many yards forward and then dig in no matter what.
Dig in no matter what, yes. And
can we now return to your treatment in the field hospital and tell me where you moved from there?
Well, I had surgery in the field hospital, and then the next morning we were moved out to the field hospital, taken to an airfield where we were placed on a Dakota and brought back to the UK. We landed at the Royal Air Force place called Stratton St Margaret's, where we were placed in their medical area. It wasn't an hospital, but we were placed there in the, and ambulance came and took us all away from there the same day. I finished up at Worcester's Ministry of Pensions Hospital, where shortly after arrival there I was operated on again. And after a period of time there, I was sent to Park Hall Orthopaedic Hospital at Oswestry on the Welsh border, where I was there until, oh, I forget what part, but I left there later on in the year and finished up at Dryburn Hospital in Durham City. And I was there until I was released to go to a retraining area at Scarborough, near Scarborough.
Had the wound left you with any sort of disability in your hand?
No, it's there, and there's limited movement of the wrist, and the little finger was just distorted. I couldn't hold it, for that time I couldn't do old weapons. I could hold it with my right hand, but there was no way I could do anything with the left hand for a long time.
Were you having physiotherapy all the time to try and improve the strength?
Various treatments. It was then, while I was in Park Hall, I think it was, I was nearing the end of my contract, if you like, the 12 years in the forces. And I asked the commandant if I could re-engage to complete 21 years. And he said, not while I was in hospital. And when I moved to Dryburn, I saw the commandant there the same way, and he gave the same answer. When I got to the retraining centre at near Scarborough, I asked the commandant there the same question. He said, not until you're out of hospital, until you are graded.
Graded in terms of fitness?
In terms of fitness, and that was that. And then on the other hand, each one turned around and said, we can't give you a recommendation because you have to be with us 6 months.
What did you feel about this at the time?
I thought was receiving a raw deal, because I tried to re-engage before I was wounded, before we left England, and I was told there was no forms.